What should British banks do to stay out of financial trouble?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. A report out today in the U.K. recommends British banks should do a couple of things to avoid a future banking collapse. Raise a lot of cash and separate their deposits from trading activities. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us live from London with the latest. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
How tough is this plan on those banks?
Not as tough as the banks feared. As you say, they won't be forced to hive off their investment banking operations, which are risky but very profitable. So this will not be a resurrection of the U.S. Glass-Steagall Act in Britain that was introduced in the U.S. after the Depression. Here, deposit taking and investment banking will just be ring-fenced from each other within banking organizations. The banks are going to have to, as you say, raise more capital, and the capital will cost more. This will make the business of banking more expensive and a bit more conservative, which economists say would be no bad thing.
All right. And banks in England, Stephen, Barclays in particular, had been threatening to pull out of London if these regulations were too strict. Any sign that could happen?
Well, this is only an interim report, and there's going to be a lot of lobbying between now and publication of the full report after the summer. But Jan Randolph of IHS Global Insight says he doesn't think there will be any exodus from London.
I think it's highly unlikely. The bank share prices this morning indicate that the banks are basically they feared the worst, but it didn't happen, and most of them are likely to stay.
The point is, he says, the banks are going to be facing tighter restrictions in all the major economies where they operate. If they do pull out of London, where would they go?
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
First quarter earnings season kicks off today with aluminum giant Alcoa releasing its numbers this morning. Trends in corporate profits have been pretty robust lately. So why are companies doing so much better these days? Here's Marketplace's Jennifer Collins.
Profits are gushing into U.S. companies from their overseas operations, up 40% in the last 5 years. Harm Bandholz is a senior economist at UniCredit.
If the U.S. companies wouldn't have used their money to buy back stocks or to invest abroad, investment spending in the U.S. would be 70% higher right now.
70% higher.
That's a big number.
Partly, he says, companies see developing countries are attractive with their speedy growth rates. And Harbor Advisory's Jack DeGann says that growth is snowballing.
The more cash that builds up overseas, the more money there is there for them to expand in other economies, not here.
Companies like Coca-Cola, Caterpillar, DuPont have been hiring thousands of workers internationally. If the investment stayed here, some analysts say 500,000 more jobs would have been created in the U.S. last year. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global stocks are mostly lower at the moment. Ford reported strong car sales in China last month, up 20% for March. GM sales, and Buick is big in China, were up about 1% there. Wall Street Friday, the Dow was off 29 points to close at 12,380. It's the month anniversary of the earthquake and tsunami that devastated northeastern Japan. The Earth seemed to mark the moment today with a magnitude 6.6 aftershock.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constellation, supporting customer choice and clean, efficient energy sources and technologies, working with customers nationwide to create a sustainable energy future. Constellation.com. By Chevrolet, undertaking a carbon-reducing effort, investing in projects like wind farms and planting trees across America over the next few years. On the web at Chevy.com. And by Manta.com, providing an online destination for small businesses to be found and to find new customers. More online at Manta.com.
Lawmakers in Georgia began to debate a new budget this week. The state has a gaping budget deficit. And as Jim Burris reports from station WABE in Atlanta, some legislators have been calling for a tax on services to bridge the gap.
Georgia lawmakers don't like to talk about increasing taxes, but in the face of at least $1 billion in red ink, they are willing to push tax reform.
This is about fairness and encourage more investment in all corners of the state.
A while back, Georgia Representative Mickey Chanel and fellow Republicans unveiled a plan to balance the budget. they'd add a tax to most services. But that didn't sit well with the providers of those services, and one by one, many services became exempt.
We're not going to tax haircuts, legal services, AAA memberships, Sam's Clubs, Costco memberships.
Or vet visits, dry cleaning. In the end, only three services remained: satellite TV, used car sales, and car repairs.
My name is Carrie Guthrie, and I'm owner of My Favorite Automotive on DeKalb Avenue in Atlanta.
Standing underneath a hoisted purple Subaru in for suspension repair, Guthrie says a new auto service tax would add $8 or so to this customer's bill. It's an expense she says she'd like to absorb, but just can't.
It's all I can do to stay on DeKalb Avenue and keep the doors open as it is in this economy.
Guthrie feels mom-and-pop auto shops don't have the political clout that other businesses in Georgia are able to wield. Dorothy Brown agrees. She's a law professor at Emory University who specializes in tax policy.
If you're Coca-Cola, this is Georgia, I wouldn't expect there to be a tax on Coke.
That's because Coke is based here. But Colorado and Washington, also faced with budget shortfalls, have passed a soda tax.
And you see states looking at all kinds of ways to raise revenue. So I certainly don't fault Georgia with trying to make sure its budget stays balanced. It's just, how do you do it and whose ox are you going to gore?
The bottom line, whatever services are eventually taxed, taxpayers are going to foot the bill. In Atlanta, I'm Jim Burris for Marketplace.
And finally, a lot of people shop online for clothing or shoes. Trouble is, they can't try the stuff on. So apparently, and I just can't believe this, some shoppers will go to the physical store and try the outfits on in the dressing room and then buy the same thing online. Not to be outdone, some stores in Australia are now charging fitting room fees of as much as $50. Fully refundable, of course, if you buy the clothing from the store. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Fly fishermen everywhere are facing a dilemma. The feathers used for their flies are in high demand by girls who will pay anything to have them for their hair.
They were going on eBay for $100 to $150 a piece when the suggested retail price was like $36.
I'm Bob Moon. It's a feisty feather fight. Next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.